Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. This is Chad Young here with Pete Ball. We are getting into the heat of the off season, Pete. We got like the winter meetings are coming up. We've had some real movement around MLB, some trades and some signings and stuff like that. And you and I have been busy making trades as well.
Yeah. It's really exciting and kind of dying for it. You know, I do play fantasy hockey and fantasy basketball, and fortunately, fingers crossed, both those teams are doing pretty well, but nothing hits quite like baseball. My football teams are falling apart. So happy to get some trades done. And hey, I know the Guardians haven't done anything, but the Sox got Sonny Gray. It's pretty cool. I'll take it. You know?
Yeah. Sonny Gray is a nice ad. And I think it's one that like we won't spend a lot of time on because it really has no keeper league value. I think if you've got Gray and you were thinking about whether or not to keep him, there's plenty of analysis out there about his value for this coming year. And that's really all this deal is about. So you can go find that. It is a park downgrade for him for sure. And it's a division downgrade for him for sure. But
I think
other than
defensive
that, I'm not,
too.
Is it?
Well, I just always bet against the Red Sox defense, but I'm looking that up now.
Yeah, I would confirm that because I'm not actually sure if that's true. But yeah, the other movement that's happened out there, Dylan Cease signing with the Jays for, you know, the official number is $210 million over 7 years, but a lot of deferrals in there. So it's more like $180 over 7 years. I think that's probably like, it's not an ideal landing spot if you're looking at Cease's long-term value, but it's not a bad one. It's a big defensive upgrade for him. And the Jays have had a pretty good track record of pitchers being healthy, pitchers pitching pretty well. And so I like it from that perspective. It doesn't really change much on him for me. Devin Williams to the Mets seems like a good landing spot, except that they're saying they're still in on Edwin Diaz. And so Devin Williams is either a great spot for him because he'll have a shot to be a closer in a bullpen that doesn't really have a ton of other options, or they'll get another option and he'll be an eighth inning guy, I guess. I don't know. We'll have to see what they do. Helsley to the Orioles. I like that one for his value because we're going to talk about this later in the episode. Guys who move from the pen to the rotation, there was some talk about Helsley doing that. And, you know, we can leave aside whether or not it would have been a good fit for him. But as a fantasy player, like, I think Helsley's a super valuable closer. I have no idea what to expect from him as a starter. So I like this. I think it's good for his value. I don't know, Pete, do you disagree?
Yeah. No, I don't. Helsley said that he was tipping pitches. He seems to have figured that out. His party seems to have figured that out. And it's not a nothing commitment for Baltimore to go 2 years, $28 million. So they must feel like he straightened it out. And the most important skill that he has is how hard he throws. And that's still there. So I'm actually pretty excited about that signing. And Keeper Cut can do a little bit of a victory lap here, Jack, because I don't know if you remember. It was a little bit of an obscure couple minutes we spent on it, but we talked about at the end of the season guys to target if you're out of your league's contention. And one guy, even though he was pitching poorly, was Ryan Helsley. So I'm willing to bet there are people out there with a last round pick, Ryan Helsley, who's now just the stud, hopefully, closer for the Baltimore Orioles. Nice job.
Yeah. There's still some risk there, right? Because, like, you know, he says he was tipping pitches. There's been there's been talk about that. It isn't just him saying it. So there's some evidence he was tipping pitches, but that doesn't mean that was the issue. And so, of course, there is some risk that he, you know, sucks. That could happen.
If I don't have him on a last, I don't know that I'd keep him. I'd need him because basically he's either going to be on a last round pick or he's going to be at where he was drafted last year. I don't think I'd keep him at where he was drafted last year just because he has a job. But if he was dropped and you added him, and so whatever your league settings are, there's probably some decent discount. That's when I'd consider it.
Yeah, his ADP this year, the last 3 weeks on NFBC through 98 drafts is 162.65. And so it's not necessarily you have to have him on a last, but yes, if you have him because he was drafted in the sixth or seventh last year and you're paying a fifth for him, like that's not going to work. But if you if he was dropped and you picked him up, whether he's on a last or like one of our keeper leagues, one of our listener leagues now has a rule that when a guy is dropped and then re-added, their keeper value is the average of a last round pick and the pick and the round they were taken. So that there's a drop, but not all the way. If you're in a situation like that, and he was like a sixth round pick last year, and now all of a sudden he's, you know, halfway between a sixth and a 28th. And so that would make him a 17th. That could be worth it, right? He's going in like the 13th or something. So, and that realistically, like that's the last 3 weeks of ADP for Helsley. That's going to improve. He's going to get started. Yeah. Like he will get taken earlier, and his min pick is kind of crazy. What do you think his min pick is?
Oh man, I'm going to guess top 100 just because that's where he was going before.
66.
That's you're trying to make too much of a statement at that point. Maybe Ryan Helsley's mom does NFBC.
Maybe. Yeah. But I do think, you know, there are those leagues where saves get pushed up, and I do think that you're going to see his ADP increase. So yeah, if you've got him, if you can keep him in the 15th or later, it's probably a pretty easy keep. If it's 10th to the 15th, it's going to start to get real borderline. 10th is probably too early. Anything or in the first 10 rounds, it's not a keep for me. But yeah, that sort of, it's, you know, the 13th is probably about where it starts to get like, I don't know if he's worth it at that price. But I like him. I think he's a good pickup. I probably will pick him up earlier than most is my guess, because I believe that he's going to, I just believe in the talent, and I think the Orioles are a good landing spot for him. It'll all be good. But having gone through some quick reviews of that news, Pete, you and I want to talk today about trades that we've made. And what we're going to try to do here is, rather than just be like, we made this trade, here's why we made it, use those trades to talk about some topics that are important across keeper leagues, whether they're auto new, whether they're not auto new, whether they're, you know, keeping as many as you want, whatever. And we're going to start off by talking about inflation. And the reason we're going to talk about inflation, the trade that sort of triggered this in our head-to-head listener league, you made a trade to pick up a fifth round price Julio Rodriguez. You gave up a fourth round pick, and you gave up Samuel Basayo, who is on a minor league contract in that league. So what that means for Basayo is that manager could choose to stash Basayo for the year. Doesn't have to use him at all. Or could stash him just long enough for us to get through keepers. We get to keep nine in that league. Basayo becomes a free keeper. Doesn't call it, like, you have to use your last, whatever your last draft pick is, but his price for the future would be a last round pick, even if you give up an earlier pick for him, and he becomes a 10th keeper. You can keep your nine and then also promote minor league guys. So here's a free, basically bonus Basayo as a keeper for that team. Plus they get a fourth round pick. You're giving up that Basayo. You're giving up a fourth, and you're going to have to forfeit a fifth round pick to keep Julio. Now, I think it is, the reason I want to talk about inflation here is because Julio is a keeper in the fifth round anyways, but I think what makes this work for a fifth and a fourth, because you are giving up a fifth and a fourth, is that after you account for keepers, Julio is like the fifth. If he were released, he'd be like the fifth or sixth best player on the board. Right. And that the value of those early picks is really high. And that's likely to still be the case into the future. Right. So like, if I look at this is actually a different league. Cause I'm looking at this for Zach Neto. And I'll tell you a minute why I'm talking about Neto. But if you look at our other listener league on Fantrax, based on ADP from NFBC, the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th picks are all guys who are being kept. Tarek Skubal, Corbin Carroll, Ellie De La Cruz, Ronald Acuna Jr., Julio Rodriguez, Paul Skeens, Garrett Crochet, and Junior Caminero. Gunnar Henderson, who is 15th off boards right now, is a keeper. Nick Kurtz is 17th off boards. Cal Raleigh, 18th. Those guys are both keepers. You're talking about, I mean, basically more than half of the top 20. 11 of the top 20 picks by ADP are likely keepers in this league. And are likely going to be keepers for at least a couple more years, maybe longer. And so Julio, while he is, you know, 10th off the board right now, you'd have to use a fifth or sixth pick on him. And that's probably going to be true next year and the year after. And that makes him really interesting at the price you get him at.
Yeah, I was pleased. There's a lot of context to this trade. A couple things about it. First of all, I made it with the Baltimore Black Sox, who, you know, obviously for him, this would be a little bit of a rebuilding move, getting the Samuel Basayo, getting the pick. It's a move I normally wouldn't make because I do value picks just so much. But because of what you said, Julio being basically potentially a top five pick for the next 3 years, I don't know if, you know, 4 years from now or 3 years from now, I'll use a second round pick to keep him. But as it stands right now, it's hard to imagine Julio losing fifth round value this year, fourth round value next year, and third round value 3 years from now. This is a five outfielder league. So, you know, he's got a little bit more value there. And on top of all that, I was a seller this year, so I have extra picks. So I had two picks in the fourth round. I dealt the last pick in the fourth round to get him. So I'll still be picking in the fourth round. My fifth round pick will obviously go to Julio. It doesn't make any less of a price. I obviously paid the iron price to acquire Julio Rodriguez here. I think the Black Sox did a great job in this trade for what they were trying to get out of it. For me, I have the number one pick in the draft. And so I'm thinking like, all right, I can pair a super late or create a trio of a super late Gunnar Henderson that I traded for when I sold last year. I got Basayo in that trade where I got Henderson. Now I can add Julio Rodriguez to that, and I'll eventually be adding most likely Aaron Judge to that as well, which just gives me such a good base of hitters that I couldn't pass it up. But I could certainly understand someone not liking this trade from my perspective. I gave up a lot, an asset who is a top prospect on such a cheap keeper price, as well as a really high pick, a fourth round pick. It's nothing to sneeze. It's not as good as it sounds in leagues where there's not inflation, right? Like the players available in that fourth round are not going to be who are available in redraft leagues because of what you just described. But it's still a really important pick. I'm not surprised that's what he wanted out of it.
Yeah. And I think it's a good move, I think, for both of you. I get why you both did it. I think that inflation piece, though, it does. I think the thing to keep in mind that makes this work for both of you is, like you said, Julio is going to be a keeper for you for the next 2-3 years, right? Until he costs a first round pick. And maybe even when he costs a first round pick, like if you're picking late in the first round, he may be worth keeping for a first round pick. It just depends on sort of how his career progresses, where we are at that point. But on the other hand, you are, like you said, it would cost that other manager, right? It would cost the Black Sox a lot to keep him. And so he now has a fourth round pick. He gets to use his fifth round pick, and he has Basayo. That's a lot of capital to use. Now, I mentioned as I talked about inflation that I wanted to talk about Zach Neto. And here's the reason I want to talk about Zach Neto and the reason that I want to talk. I think inflation is really important. In our other listener league on Fantrax, I have Zach Neto on a fourth round keeper cost. I, early in the offseason, setting things, had him as like my 10th or 11th best keeper, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And if it was, it's such a high cost for Neto. Looking at him right now, Neto is, he would cost me the 44th pick. That is my fourth round pick. That's the pick I would have to give up to keep him. He is going 33rd, 34th. His ADP is 33.88 the last 3 weeks. It's around savings. If I look at one of the things I do is I create values for picks. And so the way I do that is to basically rank all the players using the auction calculator and say, okay, the 44th pick should get me this player. This player is worth this in the auction calculator. Therefore, like you're the 44th best player in the auction calculator is worth this. Therefore, that's what that pick is worth. Based on that, Neto is a $24.50 player, and I'd have to give up a $20.50 pick. Basically, I'd save $4. It's not nothing, but if you compare that to my other keepers, Hunter Brown, I'm giving up a 25th round pick. He's a $12 value above the pick I'm giving up. Cade Smith is an almost an $18 value above the pick I'd give up. Vinny Pascantino, almost $15. Then you get into some more difficult choices. Trey Savage is about a $2 pick over the value I'd give up. Jackson Holiday, who I just traded for, we'll talk about him in a minute, is about a $6 pick value. Ezekiel Tovar is a $10 value over the pick I would give up. All of that seems challenging. And it makes Neto sort of borderline. However, once you account for keepers, Neto is no longer the 33rd best player off the board. Once I make assumptions on keepers, if I were to drop Neto, he would likely be about the 15th or 16th pick off the board. So now all of a sudden I'm giving up a 44th pick for him. I'm picking up 2.5 rounds of value on him. And the 44th pick in the draft, once I account for inflation, is not worth $20. It's worth about $9. Framber Valdez, who's a $9 to $10 value according to the auction calculator, would be the guy taken roughly 44th once I account for keepers rather than whoever could have gone there otherwise. So all of a sudden, Neto is a $15 value instead of a $4 value in terms of the amount of surplus I get for holding him. That is maybe a complicated, maybe a long way of saying that one round boost I get by keeping Neto is actually worth a lot more than that. And I am more and more leaning towards just giving up that fourth round pick and keeping Neto because of that inflation cost. And because I kind of want to have shortstop accounted for. There's a lot of good keeper shortstops out there. And so as deep as shortstop is, I think it's going to be harder to find in this league. And we do have a middle infield spot and second base is shallow. Looking at my roster, I mean, I could keep Ezekiel Tovar. I'm a little torn on Tovar because by projections, he's a great value. But his keeper cost and his ADP are just not that far apart. I don't think I'm likely to keep him. I have a similar case with Sal Stewart where I really like Sal Stewart, but his actual, he's still so risky and he is second base eligible in Fantrax apparently. I don't know. I'm very torn on what to do with those guys. I think there's a good chance neither of them make my keeper list. And so enter Zach Neto and giving up a fourth round pick for a guy who my other option is to let him go and try to pick him up in the second.
So I think there's something to be said here for first of all, when you do the math and you realize that it's actually it's not just a $4 difference. It's like a $15 difference or whatever you're getting at there. Not only does that to me make it a very obvious keeper, but I would also view it from the perspective of let's say it was actually just a $4 value. And then you brought up a Jackson Holiday who you would have a $6 value on. You get $2 more of value, but who's more likely to exceed expectations or exceed their draft spot? Maybe you think it's Jackson Holiday. I'm not going to give up on Jackson Holiday. I don't mean to make this about him specifically, but in Zach Neto, you have a player who's kind of produced back-to-back elite fantasy seasons. And to kind of compound that, you brought up, yes, shortstop's deep, but there's a lot of shortstop keepers. And because it's such a deep position, it actually makes it that much more important that you don't get behind on it because everybody else is going to have such an advantage at that spot. When you kind of combine all these factors, I think trust in the player comes into play when it comes to dollar values and how much more important their keeper value is. Because if I trust a player more, I'm more likely to actually get that value. Draft day value is one thing, but where are they going to be at the end of the season? And I think we all just kind of, maybe I shouldn't speak for everybody, but a lot of us kind of expect Zach Neto to continue to produce at a high level, even if it's not the 30-30 pace that he's been scorching the last couple seasons, which he might actually just continue to do, in which case it does make it even more obvious. But even if he doesn't do that, I just think it's more likely that he's going to give you a strong fantasy season than someone like Jackson Holiday. So I that's where I kind of ignore the minor differences in dollars. And obviously the actual difference in what their cost would be is more dramatic when you counter in inflation.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, the couple things you mind here, it's like I said, they're both sort of, even looking at pure ADP and not the inflation, they're only a couple dollars difference in their surplus value by the auction calculator. But that is with, Holiday costing very little, right? He is a 25th round keeper, and his ADP is like 142, right? So we're talking about like 140 picks. I'd give up a 284th pick to keep a guy who would go 142nd before inflation. Neto, I'm only saving like a round of value before inflation, like I said, but that earlier round is so much more valuable than 12 or 13 later rounds. And that is something that I think people sometimes forget is like, it's one thing to be like, oh, this guy is a 10 round savings. Like that's huge, but two rounds, three rounds in the early part of the draft is a lot more valuable than even 10 rounds later in the draft. And so I think that's sort of the thing that the couple of things here that are generalizable for listeners that are, you know, go beyond just like Neto is a good keeper for Chad in this situation. The things that are important to keep in mind are it's worth thinking about inflation, and inflation can really vary by how your league is structured. So in this league, because there's a draft cost, you have to give up a pick. You're limited to nine keepers, things like that. Nine keepers is kind of a lot. That means that a lot of early players are being held. If you're in a league that has no cost, like it's like a keep five, but keep any five you want, and just those are your first five players, then the first five rounds of players are gone. And your sixth round pick is suddenly going to cost you a first. And so keep that in mind as you're thinking about keepers, and don't let that confuse you, right? Don't sit here and say like, oh, this guy's a fourth round pick and I have to give up a fourth round pick. Is that really worth it? Yeah, once you count for keepers, it probably is. So that's sort of the generalizable thing. And the other is knowing that, you know, like I said, shortstop, middle infield in general, like, yes, shortstop is deep, but middle infield is going to be tough to fill. There's a lot of those guys who are keepers. It is worth looking at who's likely to be kept in your league. And if it is a lot of shortstops or it's a lot of outfielders, that's going to change the way the draft's going to play. And so we might think of shortstop as deep, but if they're all being kept, it's going to draft shallow. And that's the other thing to sort of look at, think about before you finalize your keepers. Pete, let's take a quick break. When we come back, you said you don't want to make it all about Jackson Holiday, but I'm going to make it all about Jackson Holiday. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. As promised, we're going to make it all about Jackson Holiday, at least for the next few minutes. And the reason we're going to do that is because I've traded twice for Jackson Holiday in the last couple of weeks. And so I want to talk a little bit about him. One of those was in the same league where you, sorry, not the same league where you acquired J-Rod, the same league where I am talking about keeping Neto. So the league we were just talking about was Zach Neto. I traded away a 13th round Shane Bieber and a 28th round Trevor Rogers to get a 25th round Jackson Holiday. In an auto new league, my food and travel 4x4 auto new league, I traded away a $3 Morejon and an $8 Bryce Miller to get a $12 Jackson Holiday. Now, Holiday is sort of an interesting one for me because I think there's this question of like, are we still in on Jackson Holiday? Do we still believe in Jackson Holiday? Because he didn't have a great year last year. He didn't have the year we hoped he would have. Jackson Holiday last year, according to the Fangraphs auction calculator, is the number 17 second baseman in value. Now that will also include some shortstop second baseman eligible guys. So he's actually sort of higher up among second basemen. That's about a $4 value in 5x5. That puts him 124th overall among hitters. He is now going 142 for his ADP in NFBC. Now 124th among hitters means that he's more like 200th overall. So he is still being drafted a good 60 spots above where he finished last year. I have picked him up, especially for that 25th round cost. I don't need him to be a top 150 player to return value on that draft cost, but I obviously traded for him thinking that that draft cost is reasonable. Am I wrong to think that's reasonable? Am I wrong to think we should be projecting him a good 60 spots better than he was last year?
No, definitely not. I mean, first of all, he doesn't turn 22 until 2 days from now. So happy early birthday to Jackson Holiday. This won't post until after his birthday. So happy belated birthday, Jackson Holiday. But no, I think in keeper leagues, first of all, you have to naturally account for how young and promising a particular player might be. Like, it's not apples to apples. They performed at this level last year, so everything's going to stay the same. We can't always expect players to get better. I think there's plenty of if you want to be concerned about Jackson Holliday, you can absolutely find reasons to be concerned about Jackson Holliday. His bat speed is not that great. He does not pull the ball in the air. He hits the ball on the ground too much. He doesn't play in a great ballpark. Everything seems to be going wrong for Baltimore. Like, we could really pile on if we wanted to. I'm going to bank on the fact that he is so young. He was the number one overall pick in the draft, and I'm going to assume for better or worse that there will be progress there. And if there is, it could be exponential with a player right. of his ceiling, in which case this is a risk, right? It's a risk versus reward thing. I don't think a pick that late is much of a risk in assuming he's going to get better. And so I'm willing to do that. But yeah, like I fantasy managers want instant gratification. That is just not a reality for effective keeper league management. And if you do want instant gratification, you haven't got it with Jackson Holliday, even though he went 17-17 last year as a 21-year-old. That's not bad. But I get it. If I were you, I would be keeping him. I wouldn't think twice about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a keeper. I think it's more the question of the trade, right? Giving up two good value starting pitchers. And I think the other manager, you know, his response after I said, hey, we got the deal done. I said, good deal. He said, yeah, I'm happy to rebuild my pitching. And the reality is, like, in a keep nine, suddenly adding, if you were worried about your pitching, worried about finding enough keepers, things like that, and you suddenly add Bieber and Rogers, both at pretty good prices to that mix, like, that goes a long way to strengthening and lengthening a rotation. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, part of what made this work for me is my three best keepers in terms of value. So, you know, let's leave aside the fact that Neto is probably the best player I'm going to keep. The best keepers I have in terms of value are Hunter Brown, Spencer Schwellenbach, and Cade Smith. I also have a good value on a Cam Schlittler, a good value on a Trey Savage, a good value on Connolly Early. Trading Rogers and Bieber was fine. I needed to trade pitching for hitting. Had I not made that trade, I was probably keeping like five starters and a reliever and then three bats, Neto, Pascantino, and Langoliers. Now I'll probably keep four bats because you'll add Holliday to that and five pitchers, one of whom's a reliever. And that feels like a much better balance. Although I still have some other trade talks going on that might shift that a little bit more towards offense. We'll see.
Now this is you said League One, right? The Roto?
Yeah, this is the Roto. Yeah.
So I think some important context for that is like it's a weekly league with five starting pitcher spots. Yeah. So and that by no means makes this a bad trade for that owner. I actually think it's kind of a killer trade. Like I'd love to have Shane Bieber at that value, right?
Yeah.
This is another one sort of like the one we were just talking about with Julio Rodriguez, where it definitely makes a lot of sense on both sides, especially after the season that Rogers just had. But with that said, like you don't want to necessarily find yourself in a position like I am, where I think I'm going to end up keeping five starting pitchers in that league, which means like whatever if a great starting pitcher falls to me in the draft, like I can still take them. And like, it doesn't hurt to have a surplus of starting pitchers, but it does mean that on any given week, either that player that I took at presumably a pretty early pick or one of the five guys I kept is going to be on the bench. So like you really got to pick your spots with your keepers when it comes to starting pitchers in this league. So in principle, I'm fine trading two really good value starting pitchers for a potentially elite hitter keeper just because of how our rosters are set up.
Yeah, that's a good call on the setup of the rosters. The other thing is that innings pitched is a category in this one. Wins is not. And so you have innings pitched and strikeouts along with the two rate stats, which for me in this league, and I've not been particularly successful in this league, so maybe this is bad strategy, but for me in this league has meant I've done a decent amount of starting pitcher streaming to go pick up two start guys and things like that to try to work on those counting stats because the counting stats make up a larger portion than they would otherwise. I guess that's totally true. Wins are always a counting stat, but they're a much harder counting stat to game, I think, that than innings pitched. And so I like having some flex in my rotation. I'm probably not going to have a ton of flex in my rotation this year because I probably am going to keep four starters, maybe even five. And so we'll see how it all plays out. But I do think that did make a difference for me as well. And just thinking about how I want to use my rotation, I think for the team I made this trade to, you know, they've got, let's think about this. It was 30 Clowns is the name of the Manfred's Clown Posse is the name of the team. I think, is that right? Hold on 1 second. Let me make sure I've got this right. Yes, it is. And so they, you know, if I were guessing their keepers right now, they've got Garrett Crochet on a late pick. They're going to keep Garrett Crochet. They've got Spencer Strider on a late pick. I assume they will keep Spencer Strider. That's, I think, kind of it. They've got a late choice on a Joe Musgrove who, it'll be a tough call, for what he wants to do with Musgrove, I think. But that's it. And so now he's going to look at keeping Bieber and Rogers with Crochet and Strider. That's a good place to be, I think, right? You've got an elite ace. You've got a guy who has elite ace potential. You have two other strong starting pitchers. You're not in a position where you have to like avoid pitching in the draft, like you were, you were mentioning before. It's a good spot to be. And so I think this deal makes a lot of sense on both sides.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I like the idea of having four starting pitchers. That does, like you said, leave a spot open in case someone falls to you in the draft. And you mentioned the innings pitched as like a good thing for you, right? I don't want to keep too many pitchers. I want to be able to be flexible. I think that's apt. On his side, though, getting Rogers, who like was regularly going 7-8 innings, and getting Bieber, who historically has been an absolute force. Like I could see, for the same exact reasons, the trade really working out well for him too.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I think if you're in a league like this where you're going to have five weekly starting pitchers, even if you want to stream one or two of those spots, having those other spots taken up by workhorses is good, right? Now, you want those workhorses to be guys who give you good rates, because if they don't, then you're going to be, that's the way you have to balance this. If you're going to stream a spot or two, the other guys have to be making up for that on the rates. But he's got guys who can do that. Like Crochet, Strider, Bieber, Rogers is a pretty solid 1-4, I think, in terms of setting a good floor for your rotation. And then if you want to stream around that, you can. So I like how that plays out for him.
And I love bringing that the rest of his rotation up too, because this is why context for keeper league trades matters so much, that this manager who's trading for two starting pitchers is going to risk keeping Spencer Strider, who I love, but wasn't who he was supposed to be last year. So now he's kind of insulating himself of like, all right, if the bottom falls out for Strider, he's just never that guy again. I still have three other starting pitchers to lean on here. So I kind of like it from that perspective as well.
I like that. And then getting back to the Jackson Holiday side of things, I think for me, you're talking about the potential for him to break out, which is certainly there. I think part of it for me too is, let's say he doesn't really break out so much. Like, if he just repeats what he did last year, and then he will still have been a good use of a 25th round pick. If he doesn't break out, but improves even a little bit, he'll probably be a good use of a 24th or 23rd round pick next year. He'll cost me a 23rd next year. He'll probably still be a good use of a 23rd round pick next year, and maybe even a 21st the year after that. If he does break out, then he's a good keeper for the next 4 or 5 years potentially. And so that is the other thing for me, was I felt like I was somewhat insulated because of the low cost here. I think it's pretty likely I get at least a couple years out of Holiday at a difficult position to fill, and a possibility that I've now closed up second base for the next 5 years, which would make me very happy.
That'd be huge.
So from one Jackson to another, in the head-to-head leagues, this is the league where you acquired J-Rod. I acquired Jackson Merrill. It's a 27th round cost on Merrill. I gave up a 21st round Josh Naylor and a 19th round pick. Merrill last year was the 59th best outfielder in 5x5 per the Fangraphs auction calculator, or per the Fangraphs player rater. 139th overall, $3 value. That does not make him a difficult choice to keep at a 27th round. It makes him an easy choice to keep at a 27th round pick. His ADP, though, is 68th, which is, I guess, basically the average of what he was in 2024 and what he was in 2025. I am seeing Merrill on trade blocks in almost all of my leagues.
Me too.
And as of right now, I am trying to pick him up in almost all those places if I can. But every time I do, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this.
I mean, he's just so cheap. What was the round value you got him for again?
He's a 27th. I mean, this is a little bit like we were talking about with Holiday, where like, if Holiday does nothing more than he did last year, I'll have been fine keeping him. If Merrill does nothing more than he did last year, I'll be fine keeping him for a couple years.
A couple of my question is underselling it. You could have this guy for the next decade should this league go on long enough. I mean, like, look, I wanted nothing to do with this. Isn't a victory lap. I had so many failures last year looking at you, Spencer Arrighetti, but like, I wanted nothing to do with Jackson Merrill last year at the cost, right? I wanted the bat speed wasn't particularly impressive. He chases a lot, and those problems are still, if you want to call them problems, are still there. They didn't change much last year, but he was going as a late second, early third round pick. He battles injuries. The speed just completely disappears, with who knows if that's going to come back, right? Maybe this goes the way of Bo Bichette, but like he still looked okay. He got hot as the year went on, got his feet under him. And he's another guy who's 22 years old who already has put forward a monster fantasy season. I think he's a guy who should hit for average. I think he's going to, the Padres lineup might not be incredible, but he's going to hit in the top third of it, which should be really good. At a 28th round pick or whatever the heck you said, like that's a no brainer. So I know it's not a question of if he's a keeper or not, but I am also targeting him where he's available everywhere, because it really does feel like the masses, and I shouldn't say the masses, the like three podcasts that I listen to seem to have really soured on this guy because of one kind of injury plagued down season. And I just don't get how we could go from he's a third round pick last year to now like, oh, I need to sell this guy in keeper leagues. I want nothing to do with it. That makes no sense to me. Now, the risk for you is giving up Josh Naylor at a 19th or whatever. You said, that's amazing value. You said Josh Naylor, right? You give me a look.
Yeah, 21st, I think, is the pick.
Yeah, that's huge. Like, Josh Naylor, I think, is awesome. I don't know if he's going to run again. That may have been a contract season thing, but I like that he's going to be back in Seattle. I think he's going to put forward a typical really good Josh Naylor year. I'm willing to give that up to get Jackson Merrill. And I the 19th round pick or whatever he gave up, whatever. For most of us, that's going to be a player that we drop. So I don't really mind that part of it either. I could see it being great for both sides. If it's just based on 2025, the Naylor side won by a country mile. I really like Jackson Merrill at this cost. I don't get why people soured so much on him.
Yeah, and I think when I look at Merrill, I think, you know, there's a couple of things I see that are concerning. One is he chased a lot more and his contact rate went way down. The contact rate went more down on the chase than it did on pitches in the zone, but it went down on pitches in the zone as well. And that led to a big jump in strikeout rate, right? He went from being a 17% strikeout rate guy in 2024 to 22.4% in 2025. 22.4% is not bad, but it's a lot worse than 17%. And for a guy who isn't the hardest hitter in the world, right? I mean, his average exit velocity was 90.4 in 2024. It went down to 89.7. His max EV is 111.6 for his career, 110.9 last year. 43% barrel rates. Like, he's not bad at those things by any means, but it's not elite stuff. And so as the strikeout rate increases, that becomes more concerning. It also causes me some concern because swing and miss, like, he managed to maintain a really high sweet spot. He was 99th percentile for sweet spot last year. That's great, but that is his game. That's an important part of his game. Swing and miss doesn't usually correlate with high sweet spot. Like, If you're not putting good swings in the ball, if you're putting really great swings in the ball, you don't usually swing through it that often. And if you're swinging through the ball a lot, you'd also be making a lot of less impressive contact. Maybe that's not how it's going to play out for him. I do think, you know, you mentioned the speed is gone, which I think you really meant was the stolen bases went away. He went from 16 stolen bases and 3 caught stealings to 1 stolen base and 2 caught stealings. His sprint speed went from an 81st percentile sprint speed to 79th percentile sprint speed. He's basically the same runner. So it wasn't a, like, he can't run anymore kind of thing. It was a, he wasn't trying to run. maybe that's because of some of the injury stuff. Like you said, he missed 47 games last year.
Just the thing. Like some of his injuries in April 2024, groin, September 2024, knee, April 2025, hamstring, and August 2025, left ankle. So like that could go one of two ways. That's why the stolen bases weren't there, and now he's healthy and he's going to run again. Or it could be, again, kind of the Bo Bichette thing, where Bo Bichette's left, or I can't remember which leg, is like falling off, and so he just doesn't run anymore. I don't mean to continue to compare him to Bo, because he is faster. He's more of an athlete than Bo is, which matters, obviously, for stolen bases. But we brought up Josh Naylor. You don't need crazy sprint speed to steal bases. There needs to be intent. And if that intent is gone because he's had four leg injuries in the last 2 years, That does concern me a little bit in the roto formats.
Yeah. I mean, I think where the trade comes down is, like, if I look at the Fangraphs depth charts projections for these two guys, Naylor projects for 25 home runs and 16 stolen bases. Now 16, it's like a weird number, but he stole 30 last year. He only stole 6 the year before, but he stole 10 the year before that, 6 the year before that. I do think double-digit steals is pretty likely for him. I think part of the 30 was the contract year thing, and he won't be able to sneak up on people again the way he did last year. But the Mariners run. Like, they clearly want him to run. And I think the fact that he's back there, so I do think, like, even if I don't buy the 16, but I kind of do, if you give him 25 and 10 with this is an OBP league, right? I'm trying to remember which league this is now.
If it's league one, it's OBP. The Roto's OBP.
No, it's the head-to-head. It's average.
Yeah.
So this is an average league. So Naylor looks like 25 and, let's say, 10 to 16 with a 265 average. And, you know, probably he's going to hit high in what should be a good lineup. Probably more in an RBI spot than a run scoring spot. Merrill projects per depth charts to 24 home runs and 7 stolen bases. I'm a little dubious on the home runs. I don't know that he's going to get to 24. He projects for a 269 average, which is pretty similar. Pretty similar. Like, the projections look very similar. I think more bullish on the Naylor projections. I think he can beat that steals total. I think he can is more likely to hit that home run total. And I worry about Merrill from that perspective, but he has more upside for sure, right? Naylor's not going to be a second round pick next year. I guess in theory, Merrill could be. I don't think it's likely, but it could happen. And the outfield versus corner infield does make a difference here as well.
It does. And I guess I'd just close with, like, something to support the Jackson Merrill defenders is, he didn't qualify, but if he did, and WRC plus is not perfect for fantasy, it is not a one-to-one thing. You're not going to play in a fantasy league that counts WRC plus, and I wouldn't want to be a part of that. He had the same WRC plus as Zach Neto last year, like 116. He was a well above league average hitter last year, even in a down year at 21 years old. So just view it that simply. Sometimes that's all it is.
Yeah. No, it can be, for sure. And the problem is, it can also be, you know, he had a great rookie year, and then that was never really who he was. We've seen that before too. So that's the risk. But I think it's a worthwhile gamble to take. Like I said, I think even what he did last year as the 201st best player, the 201st best player overall, I believe, is where he ended up. That was the other Jackson, who was the 200th best player overall. Merrill was the 229th best overall. But even at that level, he's a worthwhile keeper this year and maybe next year. But I expect him to do better than he did last year, if only because he stays healthier, gets closer to 150 games instead of 115. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that draft pick. We talked about valuing draft picks, and there's a draft pick for draft pick trade. It's worth discussing. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast, going through some trades and talking about some information that may be helpful to you as you think about trades in your keeper leagues. And Pete, this one's an interesting one to me. There was a manager basically just looking for an extra pick, didn't have enough, wanted to fill out the draft, and you traded away your 15th and 11th round picks for a 9th round pick. Now, talk to me a little bit about how you valued those picks and what, like, why was it worth giving up a 15th to move up to into the 9th?
First I wanted to make sure that I wasn't already going to keep a player at those picks. I think you want to make sure you do that so you don't bite yourself twice. Like, you give up an extra pick and then you have to move up around to keep a player.
Right.
So I wanted to make sure that was the case, and that was the case. But this manager was kind of clever. I shouldn't say kind of. I'm trying to be nicer to the listeners. This manager was clever. He noticed that I basically have a surplus of picks. And so I wouldn't be able to use all of them anyway. And so he convinced me to move up to the 9th. It didn't really take much convincing once, you know, that was pointed out to me. I was in 21 leagues last year. Most of them are keeper leagues. It's hard to keep track where I have extra picks and where I don't. Once I realized that was the case, I want to move up, baby. I'm all about picking often and earlier. And so even though it's only two rounds, that could be a huge difference, man. We see some crazy drop-offs in keeper leagues of tiers all throughout the draft because of the inflation. And so that could be a significant difference in player, and it made it a pretty easy decision for me.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think when... Did you just hear that?
I did. Yeah, new theme song for the pod. That was great.
It's my office has been turned into, it's my like office slash guest room slash my daughter's workspace, because she has a 3D printer. She actually has
nice.
Two 3D printers. She upgraded. And that was the song that her 3D printer plays when it finishes printing, I guess.
Oh, sweet. What do we got?
Well, let's see. One moment. It's a dragon. It's like an articulated dragon thing. It has to cool
before sick.
I take it off there. So she is. They have a craft fair at school, and she is selling 3D printed stuff. So she's printing out all the stuff she thinks will sell. So
wow, what an entrepreneur! Yeah. That's awesome.
She is. She's a photographer as well, and as we had us work with her to set up a website to sell her photography. So she's pretty impressive little businesswoman for a 10-year-old. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
Anyways, back to baseball. We're talking about these draft values. So I mentioned before that one of the things I do is I try to assign values to draft picks and based on what I think I can get for those picks. The draft values on these three picks are about $7 for a 15th round pick, about $11.50 for an 11th round pick, and about $14 for a 9th round pick. Now, it is worth noting that those are before accounting for inflation. And it is also worth remembering, and this is like a weird thing, but it's an important thing to keep in mind. When we talk about Zach Neto or Julio Rodriguez or something, inflation makes them more valuable, right? Because the pick you give up to get them is less valuable. That's because the picks are less valuable, right? So when we talk about inflation on draft picks, if I have a seven-ish dollar value on a 15th round pick, after I account for inflation, that 15th round pick is less valuable. It is not a $7 value. It's probably around a $3 value. And I could actually probably, well, I'll have to see if I can figure out exactly what I would value a 15th round pick at after inflation. But I suspect that the 15th round pick is more like a $3 value. The 11th round pick is more like a $7 value. And the 14th round pick is probably more like a $10 value, which sort of adds up, right? Then you're giving up a $3 15th round pick, a $7 11th round pick, and getting a $10 ninth round pick. I sort of made up those numbers. And so the fact that they worked out is just a coincidence. It's not anything more than that. But it's an interesting trade, and it was a smart trade for both you and this other manager. Cause I think that they will benefit from having a 15th round pick they otherwise wouldn't have had. I think the drop off from 9th to 11th, like you're right that we see drop offs. I also think that because there are let's see, there's 108 keepers in this league, right? Nine per team. With 108 keepers in the league, by the time you get to the 15th round, you're looking at sort of end game-ish kind of stuff. And you know how end games and drafts go, right? They're really random, right? And so when you go look at the draft results from last year, if I go look at the ninth round, there are some interesting picks in the ninth round. There are some less interesting picks in the ninth round. And the same is going to be true of the 11th. The same is true of the 15th. I'm trying to get this to load. Here we go. So the ninth round from start to finish. And what I don't have in front of me, by the way, is which of these guys were keepers and which of them were drafted here. But the ninth round was Roman Anthony, Joe Ryan, Byron Buxton, Taylor Ward, Brandon Woodruff, Mason Wynn, Bubba Chandler, Yusei Kikuchi, Framber Valdez, Trevor McGill, and Max Muncy, and Nick Castellanos. So you've got guys like, you know, Casty, not good. Kikuchi was up and down. Wynn had a down year. Woodruff missed most of the year, but then was good. But then you also have like Roman Anthony, obviously excellent pick there and going to be a keeper because of that. The 11th round, Victor Robles, Luis Renjifo, Brandon Pfaadt, Porter Hodge, Colt Keith, Alec Burleson, Jordan Romano, Jonathan India, Rhys Hoskins, Brandon Lau, Jorge Soler, and Jordan Lawler. You don't have an Anthony in there. But when you look at the guys who were actually drafted in those two rounds, they're not that different. When you go down to the 15th, Nolan Arenado, Cody Bradford, Jesus Luzardo, an interesting pick in the 15th round, although he might have been a keeper. Nathaniel Lowe, Drew Rasmussen, Ivan Herrera, Ronel Blanco, Alejandro Kirk, Matt Wallner, Tyler Fitzgerald, Tyler Glasnow, who was a keeper for sure, and Sugano. I think you can make a case that like the upside is higher in the ninth round. You have more of an opportunity to get a meaningful player in the ninth round than you do in the 11th, but it's not like, it's not a guarantee that a ninth round pick is better than an 11th round pick. And a 15th round pick has value based on what we just saw. And so from that perspective, I think, you know, you have maybe raised your floor a bit of your draft by moving up a couple rounds and giving up a 15th round pick that very likely would not be super meaningful. But the other team has raised their ceiling. They've given themselves two shots at late round value that you're only going to get sort of one. And so I like this trade. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it, you know, for you, the perspective of like, I was going to have to give up my 19th, 20th, 21st, whatever it is anyways, because I had too many picks. Getting that pick back as part of this deal does make a difference. So I like it. I think it's a win-win, but I do think it is a good sort of evaluation of, you know, or a good moment to stop and evaluate. Like, how do you think about draft picks? How much is it worth moving up a couple rounds? Especially if you're in a league like ours, where because of draft pick trades over the course of the season, some teams may have more picks than they can use and some teams may have fewer picks than they can use. And if you find yourself in that boat, like, go find your counterpart. Go do what this other manager did. I can't remember who it was who you made the trade with, but go do what that manager did. Find the person who is your counterpart. If you have too many picks, find the person who doesn't have enough. If you have too few, find the person who has too many. You can probably find a win-win to just swap two picks for one direction or the other, and both of you end up better off as a result.
Yeah, and it could have been hard to find me. I'm looking at my picks in this league, man. I don't remember making all these trades, but between the ninth and the 10th round, I will now be making five picks. So it couldn't have been very hard to find. Yeah, I'm now way more excited for this draft than I remember me being.
That's a big chunk. Ninth and 10th rounds. I mean, I just read off to you who went in the ninth last year. 10th round, Brendan Donovan, O'Neal Cruz, Sean Murphy, Elliot Ramos, Pete Fairbanks, Jeremy Pena, Xander Bogaerts, Seth Lugo, Gleyber Torres, Gabriel Moreno, Josh Lowe, Austin Wells. Again, I don't know off the top of my head who of those guys were keepers. I assume O'Neal Cruz was a keeper. Yeah. Other than that, I'm not sure any of those guys. Maybe Lugo was. But there's some value to be had there. And the other thing about that ninth, 10th round space is you're still at a spot where if a guy breaks out and becomes like a fourth, fifth round value in the future, they're going to be able to be kept for a while.
Yeah.
you know, you make that same trade. It's an interesting dynamic because if you had made that same trade and instead of a ninth for an 11th and 16th or 11th and 15th, you had done, let's say, a sixth for a eighth and a 12th or something like that. It might have been the same value, but that sixth round pick is it is more likely to help you this year. It is less likely to provide you long-term value. Sure. And so there's sort of an interesting dynamic there and trade-off there of thinking about, like, would I rather have another shot a little bit later where the guy is more likely to become a keeper, or a little bit earlier where the guy's more likely to help me this year? That probably depends on where you are in the win curve. Like, are you expecting to win this year? Then you probably want the help now. If not, then maybe not. But it also depends on how many keepers your league has. Because this is a nine keeper, that ninth round pick, like, has a real shot to be a keeper for you. If you're in a keep three, your ninth round pick is probably not a keeper for you, right? Your keepers are either going to be free agents you pick up who break out or absolute studs. And the ninth round pick just is going to fall in between. And so as always, know your rules, know how your league is structured. A ninth round pick is more valuable long-term in this league than it would be in a keep three. So, speaking
point.
Of picks, got one last trade I want to talk about very quickly. I made a trade in, is it the same league? Yeah, it's the same head-to-head league where I gave up a 16th round Robbie Ray and I got back a 15th round pick. Now, I just said a 15th round pick is worth like $3 after inflation. A 16th round Robbie Ray is, what's Robbie Ray's ADP? His ADP is 136, which is like 12th round. A 4-round gain in ADP after you account for inflation, it's probably more like an 8-round gain. That is worth more than $4, $3, whatever. That is worth more than the pick I got. I still feel okay about this because I don't think Ray was going to be one of my keepers. How do you think about that when someone is interested in a player, or when you're selling a player who you either know or think you won't keep, or who if you don't keep, you can replace them pretty easily, right? So like losing Ray didn't hurt me per se. How do you balance making sure you get fair value, which maybe I didn't hear. Maybe I should have asked for more like a 10th or 11th round pick. How do you balance that with being like, whatever, at least I got something for this guy?
At this point in the year, I think you've got to be open to the whatever, at least I got something for this guy, because if there's a manager who's proactive enough to be hunting for like, all right, I just want to get someone at a keeper value and I'm willing to give up this pick to do it, there's no way that you were the only person he sent an offer to unless he's like really into Robbie Ray. I mean, right. Robbie Ray as a player, like, you know, we can get into that. I kind of like Robbie Ray. His numbers across the board, particularly the strikeouts, which is weird for him, were down last year. You know, he learned the new changeup grip from Tarek Skubal, and we thought that would maybe carry over into some success. It resulted in a really low swing strike rate for him and some inflated numbers. On the other side of that, I love where he pitches. His ERA estimators seem to support the 3.65 ERA, which I think we'd take from Robbie Ray, as long as it comes with a return to the strikeouts, which, you know, we'll see if we get. It's kind of not the point, though, right? Because you weren't planning on keeping Robbie Ray, which meant if you can get anything for him, it's a win. This manager obviously plans to keep Robbie Ray and had to give up a late round pick. So not a late round pick, but you know what I mean. One that, just went over,
I mean,
it's probably like a $3 value.
We have a 28 round draft, but because of the keeper structure, a lot of teams give up, almost everyone's going to give up their 28th round pick. There's almost never a pick made in the 28th round of this draft because every team has a free agent they picked up that worked out. A lot of teams have more than that. So like I am likely giving up my 28th, 27th, 26th, 25th, 24th, 23rd, and maybe my 22nd. I'm definitely giving up my 21st in this one because I'm keeping a 21st round Kyle Bradish. I will have very few picks after 20. I'm not going to be alone in that. The 15th round won't be the end of this draft, but it'll be the 15th round. If you really think like there's 13 rounds after this, that's another, 156 picks that theoretically could be made. I'll bet it's not in the last 150 picks. I'll bet it's more in the last 90 picks, maybe even less. And because of that, it is a late round pick. I think that's a fair way to assess it. He gave up, like, I just read off the list of guys who went in the 15th round last year. Giving up that plus a 16th round pick for Ray, which is what his keeper cost will be, is fine.
Right.
I think that'll work out well for him. I think for me, if I look at this that roster right now, this is a league where I traded for Jackson Merrill. So my keepers include Merrill. I have Merrill, Nick Kurtz on a 26th round keeper cost, Noelvi Marte on a 28th, Kyle Bradish on a 21st, Nolan McLean on a 28th, Mason Miller on an 11th, who we're going to talk about him in a future episode. So I got some questions about Mason Miller. I've got Brenton Doyle on a 27th. I've got Trevor Rogers on a 28th, Kerry Carpenter on a 24th, Jason Dominguez on a 26th, Shane Bieber on a 17th. I had Ray on a 16th. All of that, like, and then I even have like O'Neill Cruz on a 9th, which seems sort of crazy, but by ADP is a good value. The point of all that is, like, that was like 12 different players I just named. So it isn't so much that I definitely wasn't keeping Robbie Ray. He was sort of on the outside looking in for now. That could have changed any time. I could have traded somebody different and moved him up, and that would have been fine. But I'm also like, I'm just not going to miss him.
Right.
I'm looking at this. This is a head-to-head league. I have a fourth round price on Edwin Diaz. If it weren't a head-to-head league, I think I might do that, especially if he ends up landing with the Dodgers.
If it was a head-to-head league, I'd definitely consider that.
Yeah. In head-to-head, like, I'm in a weird situation in this one with him because I've got him. I also have an eighth round value on Trevor McGill, who, again, by ADP, it looks like a decent way to get some saves. I have an 11th round price on Mason Miller, who I said we're going to talk about in a future episode, where, like, I'm super excited about Mason Miller as long as they don't move him to the rotation. And we'll talk about why. Our next episode, we'll talk about why I'm worried about that. So, like, I'm just not really sure what I'm going to do about closers in this league. And so, like, all of that added up is enough to make me be like, you know what? I'm just not going to stress about Ray. And do I feel like I mean, the other piece of this is, like, I shopped Ray. I reached out. I didn't shop Ray specifically, but I reached out to this manager having looked at who I thought their keepers were and said, it looks to me like you could use more keepers. I have more keepers than I need. Here's some guys that are sort of borderline for me. Who's interesting? He was like, Ray is. We talked about what it would cost. I gave him a couple of options. I also gave him the, like, Ray plus a pick for a higher pick. And the 15th was sort of, I just threw a 15th pick out there. And he was like, yeah, that works. Anytime a manager's like, yeah, that works, there's a part of me that's like, oh, I should have asked for more, right? Because, like, if I'd asked for a 13th, he'd have been like, yeah, I could do a 15th. I'd be perfectly happy with this. Instead, I'm like, oh, if I'd asked for a 14th or a 13th, would that have been better? I don't know. But so there is a part of me that's like, because I was the aggressor here, because I was the proactive one here, I wonder if, like, had I waited longer, would, you know, some managers might not be ready for the offseason yet, and they're not focused on baseball yet. And maybe somebody else would have given me more for Ray. I don't know. If somebody comes back to me and tells me they would have given me more for Ray, I'll let them know that 17th round Shane Bieber is still available, I guess, and see if they'll give me more for him. So I still have guys to trade here. But my read on this is I reached out to multiple managers saying, like, hey, you might use an extra keeper, and I've got an extra keeper to move you. I've put up a trade block that says I have guys to move. I think this manager probably got a better, and this is not me complaining. This is not me saying I didn't get a good deal. I'm fine with this trade. I think the other manager made the better deal here. I think he bought low because I was anxious to make a trade, and because I know I have guys I want to get rid of. And so I was willing to just suck it up and take a 15th round pick. But I'm also fine having taken a 15th round pick.
Yeah, I that may end up being the case. But, like, I think the 30,000 feet in the air point of view here is you had an excess amount of keepers. There was a guy who you probably weren't going to keep, and you got something for him. This manager is low on keepers. They gave up a really late pick that chances are, right, is probably a player they would have ended up dropping at some point and got a keeper out of it at a decent cost. So, like, I have a hard time saying one side or another won this. I understand the thought process. Like, timing is important here for sure.
Yeah.
But getting something for Robbie Ray after considering his age and the season he just had, I'm fine with that. I'll bank it, even if he bounces back this year, which I kind of hope he does.
Yeah, and I think he will. And I the reality is, even if he doesn't bounce back a ton, he's still going to be valuable. So like he's,
outside of Tommy John, he's a 32 start machine. So just from a reliability standpoint, that's going to be nice.
Yeah, and in a daily head to head league, being able to plug him in, you get a start from him every week. You get two starts from him every other week or every third week or whatever it is, and those starts mostly come in a pretty great place to pitch. Yeah. I think it's a good win. I think it's a win-win. I think is what it comes down to. I think it is more likely that I regret it than that he regrets it, except for the fact that because I don't think he was going to end up making my top nine keepers, I'll never know if I was going to regret it unless somebody reaches out to me tomorrow and is like, hey, I would have given you a 10th for him. And then I'll feel like an idiot, but
I don't think anyone
won't be the first time, but it won't be the last. I feel like an idiot. So, all right. Well, we've been going for an hour here. We've got, I still have like eight more trades maybe that we could have talked about, but maybe we'll get to those in another episode. Hopefully this was useful. If you've got feedback, you can reach out to me on Blue Sky at Chad Young. Peter, you still doing anything on Twitter? You on Blue Sky yet?
I have a Twitter account that exists. And it's on private. If you are a listener and you want to follow me, just send me a request. I'll of course accept it. Just don't be surprised if I don't get to it for like 2 weeks. Cause I don't really use Twitter.
So that's at Pete B Baseball. If you can find him, you can find me, like I said, I'm Blue Sky. I'm not really on Twitter anymore, but I'm Blue Sky at Chad Young. You can also find us both on the Pitcherless Discord. So if you got questions, stuff you want us to cover, let us know. If you have feedback in the episode, let us know. But with that, hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with you next week.